I told you we were going to just kick that rain out of here and enjoy a beautiful Friday night into high school football Friday night. Here we go with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports picks 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. You, of course, are always connected with us on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Big show coming up today as we count it down to 6 o'clock, a chopper ride to Uniondale at Norwell High School, and the Parkview Sports Medicine High School football tailgate pregame show. Jim, Shannon, and Duke, not only with previews of tonight's high school football action, but also they will be passing out prizes. I understand that everybody that shows up is going to win a brand new koozie. But it's still, you know, a nice prize. It's got a logo on it. So check it out. I don't know if everybody will even be able to get one. I don't know how many we've got with us, but they do have some prizes that they'll have with them. So hang out with them before the game if you're heading down to Norwell to see the East Noble Knights and the Norwell Knights. That's our featured high school football game of the week tonight as we break out of the SAC, go to the NE8. Should be a fantastic environment with a perfect night for football. Temperatures at kickoff probably right around 70, 71 degrees. Clear skies, can't wait for it. Should be a lot of fun. Looking really, really forward to heading down there tonight after we get done with the show. And then after the game, Caleb and I will be together at the Wayndale Pizza Hut. So we go from Uniondale to Wayndale. At Wayndale, we'll be at the Pizza Hut up until 11 o'clock with the Indiana Physical Therapy post-game show. Join us out there or on the air. Of course, don't forget, all night long you can stream 1380 The Fan. Just by going to our website, getting the app, or looking for 1380 The Fan wherever you listen to your favorite streaming radio stations. So we're going to be all over the place tonight. And speaking of all over the place, the Indianapolis Colts, of course, with all their injuries, we don't know who's going to play, who won't, who will. Crazy. And now Carson Wentz apparently took the field today and did practice with the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are saying Carson Wentz is now a game time decision. The Colts have worked all week in leading up to this moment. They have not wanted to admit that Carson Wentz isn't healthy enough to play on Sunday because it's a big game. And they need Carson Wentz to be available because the Colts don't have plan B. This is basically Andrew Luck 2.0. Let's take a quarterback who's beat up, but we can throw him out there, and he's still even half healthy, going to be better than any other option we have. We want to win this game, and so we'll worry about tomorrow. Let's go out there today with an injured quarterback. There is no possible way Carson Wentz, after what I saw on tape when he twisted an ankle completely upside down, and then we find out had the other ankle sprained as well, there is no way that you can be confident in putting him out there and dealing with two ankles. It's one thing if you have a sprained ankle and you can get it to a point where you hobble a bit, but at least you've got the other ankle to rely on. In this case, he has neither ankle. Sprained ankle on the left ankle and apparently a high ankle sprain on the right. And the Colts are saying game time decision. You know what that means? The Colts are somehow going to give him enough pain medication, enough shots, tape it like it's a cast. And Carson Wentz is going to hobble his butt out there and he's going to be the quarterback for the Colts. And I don't think it's the right move. I want the Colts to win this game. I understand it's almost a forfeit or a sacrifice if you don't put Carson Wentz out there because the option between Jacob Eason and Brent Hundley is going to make it a real long shot to be able to beat the Tennessee Titans on the road in their place. But this is a real risk. After what I saw last week, if you think that doctors are going to say those ankles are fine, 100%, put him out there, he'll be able to handle it. Soon as he gets one good pop or twist off that ankle, I mean, I just don't get it, Caleb. There's no way. Like I said yesterday, it would be a miracle if he was able to play. It would be, he would have to have rubber ankles if he was able to survive what I saw on tape last week and come back 1 week later and play like no problem. This, to me, this is the Colts pressuring Wentz or, you know, Wentz. Now, first of all, as an athlete, you always want to be cleared to play, right? I mean, if you can hobble out there on two half ankles, then you feel like you got enough of an ankle combined that you can go out there and actually participate, play, and your ego always tells you you're the best option. And so I'm sure Carson Wentz is doing what he can to get out there. But at some point, medical people or just the team itself has to do what's best for the player. And for the long-term solution with Carson Wentz, what's best for the player is not to throw him out there this quick after such a, I don't want to call it gruesome, but it was a nasty, nasty ankle sprain last week.
Don't sacrifice the long-term health of your quarterback for a short-term problem. I mean, ankle sprains will heal if you give them time to heal. And I think part of it is the Colts dug themselves into a corner by basically saying to everyone that, okay, Jacob Eason is the backup. We don't need to trade for Nick Foles or try to get, you know, some other deal. They basically said that, you know, we're fine with Carson Wentz and Jacob Eason. They drafted Sam Ehlinger as you know, insurance policy, I guess. And then Brett Hundley, same deal on the practice squad.
Of course, we went all of training camp pretty much believing that it was Wentz, Eason, and Ehlinger as the three quarterbacks because the Colts were refusing to make a move. Even when Wentz got hurt the second day of training camp, the Colts made no effort to go out and get anyone else, eventually getting Hundley as a very late signee. And now it almost looks like if the Colts were pinned against a wall and Carson Wentz wasn't available, that it might be Brett Hundley that gets the start. What a slap in the face to Jacob Eason. What does that do for a young quarterback who's trying to establish some confidence? And what does it say about the team that drafted you and how much they believe in you at this point in the fact that they give you the second team position and say, you're our option B. And then when option B is due to take over for option A, they say, oh, wait a minute, we don't feel as comfortable about this as we thought we would. We were only saying it because we didn't think we'd have to play him. And now that we have to play him, we don't feel so good about putting him out there against a team like Tennessee. So we'll put Hundley out there. Well, I mean, what a mess.
Yeah, to me, if there's any doubt that he is not fully ready to go, and I'm not saying fully ready to go means that, oh, he's still getting treatments and, you know, has some pain and still limping around. No, I'm saying fully healthy and fully ready to go because you cannot sacrifice your whole season by risking, and I understand you can get injured any play of any game throughout the season. But that's what happened last Sunday against the Rams. And if the Colts organization is willing to take the risk and start Wentz on Sunday, which all signs are pointing to the fact that he will start on Sunday, then that tells me they are that desperate to try to right the ship when I think you have to ask, if this was not a divisional opponent, would they be this desperate?
And what do you get if you win the game, you put Carson Wentz out there, but this lingers week after week after week? Then you end up losing reps with Carson Wentz at practice because you're constantly treating or trying to heal the ankles. He becomes a less than mobile quarterback, which is one of the advantages that he had in coming in this year, was that Carson Wentz was a little more athletic and he would be able to bootleg and move from the pocket. Carson Wentz, his instincts are such that when he feels pressure, he tries to duck and scramble out of it. He is going to end up being on the run, and it's going to be a really uncomfortable position for me to sit on my couch and watch it, knowing as soon as he takes a hit and might catch a foot, a cleat, or get caught underneath the leg of a defender, that we might see that might be the end of Carson Wentz for the entire year.
Someone texted in, going to make great Hard Knocks episodes. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
I think also
they should start this week is what they should do.
Also, another factor in all of this, this has been a problem for the Colts organization for years, but when it comes to just having injuries and injuries to key players, it seems like every year this is a problem. Do they need to revamp their treatments? Do they need to overhaul the medical staff?
I mean, we've talked about that for years.
Some of this stuff, you have to look at, you know, what is the problem here? I'm not saying that it's the team's fault that Carson Wentz sprained his ankle. That's not what I'm saying. But what they're doing moving forward, if Wentz plays Sunday and he's not truly fully ready to go, and there's a doubt, you know, or an inkling that he could re-aggravate either of those ankle sprains, then what are you doing?
Well, let's go back and look at the medical staff, because we've talked about this issue for at least a couple of years, whether this is a competent group that the Colts work with, because we can go all the way back to the Peyton Manning situation. And I don't know if the Colts were lying to us or if the medical personnel just didn't have a clue, but they kept telling us, oh, it's a week by week thing. It's a couple of weeks. It might be up to 6 weeks. And then it was going to be, he'll be back, but probably won't be by week six. And then it was the full season. Colts never did actually definitively get the right answer on Peyton Manning, because I think they got the answer that Peyton Manning would not be able to come back and be the quarterback that he was before, and the Colts made the decision that if he couldn't come back and be the quarterback that he was, then they were going to move forward and take Andrew Luck. If somebody had said to Bill Polian or had said to Jim Irsay, Peyton Manning is going to come back 100% healthy and he could have a long future as a healthy quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, do you think the Colts turn it over to Andrew Luck and let a completely healthy Peyton Manning get away? I don't think so. No, they did it because they felt like Peyton was not going to be able to rebound from that injury. And so there's some faulty information from the medical staff. It cost them Peyton Manning.
And the team said all along, oh, we expect him to be back. We expect him to be back. But there were reports locally that, no, people are hearing that Manning is having this neck surgery and they don't expect him to be ready to go. But the team kind of denying it. Same deal with Andrew Luck a couple of seasons ago.
And then Andrew Luck had to go overseas to get some kind of a treatment because the Colts medical staff couldn't take care of him. And I'll tell you, to this day, Andrew Luck's retirement was in part because of the treatment, I think, that he did or didn't get from the Indianapolis Colts, whether it was pressure to play when he was hurt, whether it was the type of treatment he got from the medical staff. It's been an issue, Caleb, for years that the Colts seem to have, number one, more injuries, and number two, take longer to recover from them. Now, you know, I will say there's a few modern miracles that we've had over the last month or two, that Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson coming back from those foot surgeries, whoever did the work orthopedically for the foot, he must be okay, because he did that and got those guys back in, what, 3 to 4 weeks, and we were being told 5 to 12 weeks. So, you know, that actually went pretty well. But you've got lingering back issues with Quentin Nelson. You've still got the ankle issue with Darius Leonard. You've got, I mean, The injuries just seem to never go away, whether the Colts play people that shouldn't be playing because of the pressure to win, or if it's just bad work by the medical staff, whether it's the rehab group, the therapy group, whatever you want to say. It just seems like more Colts end up injured at some point and end up injured for a longer period than we expect them to be out. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Busy show coming up on the other side of the break. We're going to talk to Judge Phil, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, the big one in Chicago coming up tomorrow. It's the big noon kickoff, which actually means it's the big 11 a.m. kickoff because it's in Central Time. So morning kickoff, a couple of teams that are going to play physical at the line of scrimmage. Can Notre Dame match Wisconsin at the line of scrimmage? That's the big question we're going to ask the judge, the host of Fighting Irish Preview. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6, Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. Of course, a beautiful Friday. We're going to be down at Norwell tonight for the Knights versus the Knights on a Friday night. Should be a great night. Tonight down in Uniondale. I've run out of nights. But East Noble, Norwell, our featured high school football game of the week. Of course, it all gets started with the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show. If you're coming to the game, hang out with Jim, Shannon, and Dute, and tell them you want one of those 1380 The Fan koozies that you can get just for showing up and asking while supplies last. Tomorrow, it is the big noon kickoff at 11 a.m. in Chicago. It is Notre Dame versus Wisconsin. When we want to talk Fighting Irish football, nobody better than the host of Fighting Irish Preview. And that's exactly what we're doing right now, but I don't want to take any of the thunder away from the show. You can listen to the show tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., right after Talking Sports, almost leading you right into kickoff tomorrow morning, and the Notre Dame broadcast, which will start at 11 a.m. here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. It's the Judge, Phil Hauk. Judge, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me on, Brett. I appreciate it as always. And I'll give you one teaser for the show tomorrow morning. Tim Priester and I, Tim Priester, America's foremost authority on Notre Dame football, and myself have a difference of opinion as to who will prevail in the game tomorrow.
It is a split decision, as the judge knows well. Judge, I got an idea of who took who. There's a history here between you two. So I got an idea. Here's the thing. We don't know about Notre Dame, do we? I mean, I saw that game last week, and I'm like, I got done with it, and I thought, I don't know. It's kind of what I expected. It was ho-hum. I can't say that I'm overly impressed with Notre Dame. I can't say I'm terribly disappointed in Purdue. I kind of got a little bit of what we expected, didn't we?
Well, two things. One on each side of the ball. Defensively, actually, I thought Notre Dame played really well last week. They've been a very disruptive defense this season, with the exception, and we've talked about this before, in the first two games, giving up the big plays. They gave up four of those, two in each of those games. That skewed everything. But this last week, they didn't give up big plays to Purdue, held them to 13 points, and this is a defense that's got 25 tackles for loss. They've got 13 sacks. They're on track to set an all-time school record in sacks. They've got five interceptions already this year, only seven in total last year. So that's actually what you kind of thought you were getting with the Marcus Freeman defense. So I thought we saw progress for Notre Dame's defense last week, and certainly they're going to need that this week against Wisconsin. On the offensive side of the ball, I think they're starting to get a little bit of an identity, and that is Notre Dame's not going to run the football. I think we kind of know that by now, completely different from their identity last year. But they do have big play capability, and that's what they're going to have to rely on. And I think against last week, you know, Michael Mayer, Kevin Austin, the two best receivers on Notre Dame's team, combined for one catch for 5 yards. Well, Avery Davis steps up. He gets five catches. He goes for 120 yards. But I wouldn't expect Kevin Austin and Michael Mayer tomorrow to have such relatively quiet days. And I would expect them to play probably a little better, especially Kevin Austin. Michael Mayer didn't make a lot of catches because he was bracketed on every single play. Kevin Austin had a couple drops. Braden Lindsey, of course, also had the drop in the end zone. I think the passing game is coming, and if that happens, Notre Dame can hit some big plays. So there was a little bit of progress there, but it's not going to be through the running game that Notre Dame has success this year. It's going to be through the passing game.
But you do have two dynamic running backs for Notre Dame that are playmakers that you do want to get the ball into their hands. Can Notre Dame empty the backfield, try to create mismatches maybe in the passing game, maybe set up some type of bubble screen, something like that? How do they utilize that talent when they're not able to basically run the football, primarily, in my mind, because of the offensive line?
Yeah, well, emptying the backfield, probably not going to happen, at least not too often, because as many sacks as Notre Dame is getting against opposing quarterbacks, Jack Cohn's being sacked, too, because the pass protection has not been good. So Notre Dame's got to find ways to protect him and give him the time to find those receivers down the field. And one of those strategies is to get Tyree and Kyren Williams in the game at the same time. And you're right, they are big playmakers. They did combine for six receptions, those two guys, last week, including Kyren Williams had a touchdown on a long one, so they can get the ball to him through the passing game. And you also but if you have the two backs in the game, you can use those guys in protection as well. Notre Dame also employed, they took one of their tackles, Joe Alt, who's a freshman, and they lined him up as a tight end last week to help to shore up that offensive line. So they're getting creative, trying to protect Jack Cohn, and getting the ball in the hands of Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree is a great idea. But Notre Dame may have to do that more and more through the passing game.
Whereas you talk about how the secondary has stepped up, the interceptions and all, but that's probably not where this game's going to be decided. I think this one's all about what happens in the trenches, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, this is, but I don't, you know, I don't think from what I've seen so far that this is a great Wisconsin offensive ball club, and that usually means ground and pound. Notre Dame, I think, can keep the points down. They're a physical defense. It's hard for me to imagine somebody really running over Notre Dame to a great extent. They've gotten better in the three games. And so I think Notre Dame can match the physicality of Wisconsin's offensive line and hold their own in that regard. And you're right, Graham Mears, kind of a disappointment when he was recruited, and he's the successor to Jack Cohn. He took over when Jack Cohn got hurt last year, as everybody knows. Mm-hmm. He's got 9 touchdown passes in, I think it's exactly 9 starts. Well, that doesn't sound horrible, but what is kind of interesting is 5 of those 9 touchdown passes that Graham Mears threw were in his first game that he played last year in October against Illinois. Since then, in 8 starts, 4 touchdown passes. So the passing game, you know, give a pretty good defense like Notre Dame a one-dimensional team, and I think they ought to be able to keep the points down.
Tell you what I've seen from Mertz is he does not like to throw the deep sideline pattern. He likes to throw the ball intermediate routes over the middle. He did it time and time again against Penn State. I want to talk about the Jack Cohn factor, playing against his old team. Does that have some kind of an impact, positive or negative, on this football game?
That's probably a little bit overrated. The thought that Jack Cohn is going to be able to provide all kinds of information maybe to Notre Dame. Brian Kelly talked about that this week. He said he's not pumping his quarterback every day for information about the Wisconsin defense and offense and secrets and things like that. But what I think is a factor is I think Jack Cohn's gonna. He has got to be very motivated for this. He's a very low key kid. He wouldn't say a lot. He wouldn't say it how motivated he is to perform well in this game. But yeah, he's got to be motivated to play well in this game, considering he was a starting quarterback. He took Wisconsin to the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago. And then last year he gets injured and he lost his job. And I don't think there's any real hard feelings there. Nonetheless, he wants to perform really well in this game to show Wisconsin what they lost.
Can't wait to find out the predictions. I'm going to wait till tomorrow morning to find those out. And, of course, the website, FightingIrishPreview.com. Judge Phil, always on top of it with social media. And as we said, Fighting Irish Preview, now in its 25th season, every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM right after Talking Sports with Jim Shevlin. Did I cover it all, Judge?
Yeah, you did. And if you're interested in my thoughts on Brian Kelly breaking Newt Rockne's all-time wins record, go to that website and look for an article I wrote called Brian and Newt. Brian and Newt, I think you'll enjoy it.
There you go. Appreciate it, Judge. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Brett. You too.
That is Judge Phil joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotlines. So coming up on the show in our next hour, it's the replay of the high school football picks of the week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. We'll do that at about 5:45. And, of course, at 6 o'clock, the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show. It is set up live at Norwell tonight. East Noble, Norwell, our featured high school football game of the week. After the game, be sure to join Caleb and I live at the Pizza Hut in Wayndale. We'll have the Indiana Physical Therapy postgame show, scores, highlights, coaches, interviews, and more up until 11 o'clock. It's your home for Friday nights and high school football, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Then tomorrow, let's turn it over to college football. The Indiana Hoosiers under the lights down in Bowling Green against Western Kentucky. That game can be heard on our sister station, Big 92.3. To talk about it and get a preview on the Hoosiers, we're joined by Dustin Dopierak, who joins us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Dustin, appreciate you taking time out once again to join us here on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is getting kind of tough territory for the Hoosiers. They have to go on the road, play this game against Western Kentucky, and I look what's ahead with the Hoosiers. And this could be kind of letting yourself go on the top of the slide with no breaks if you don't get this one won, because you got Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State, Maryland, Michigan all coming up. Those are going to be tough Big Ten games. This one looms as really an important non-conference game for the Hoosiers tomorrow night.
No, it absolutely is. I mean, they're going on the road. They're going against a team that really flings the ball around. Western Kentucky is an interesting and very sort of difficult challenge. I mean, their quarterback has thrown for like 850 yards and 10 touchdowns in two games. And I think he was over 10,000 in his career when he played at Houston Baptist before he transferred. They're going to do a lot of stuff. They're going to be a very interesting or very difficult team to cover. And so you're playing a night game. It's on the road. Obviously, they're going to be pretty jacked up about it. You have to imagine the attendance is going to be pretty good. It's kind of a classic trap game. I mean, the only thing I would guess that you would have going for Indiana is because, last week was such a tough loss. They don't go into this one thinking that it's a sure win. They go into this thinking, man, we got to get right. Because as you said, it is, you're at the top of the hill and you could be, going downhill with no breaks if you don't get this one and sort of stem the tide a little bit here. Because, you could see their season slipping away very quickly. And I think at least because they are 1-2, they are aware of that. And they know that this could go sideways really fast if they don't get this one, because there's a lot of games in the schedule that look tougher than they did even, 3 or 4 weeks ago. You look at Michigan State has obviously gotten itself right. Kenneth Walker has been terrific. I think he might be leading the country in rushing. Michigan is no joke anymore. I mean, they're a top 25 team on top of what you already knew about Penn State and Ohio State. Those are two top 10 teams. So it can get ugly really, really fast for Indiana. And, them getting right obviously needs to stop this week. And it is not a lock that it's going to happen. But at least they go in there with that understanding that it's not a game that is a surefire win.
A lot of fans are starting to create the quarterback controversy for Indiana. There's a lot of talk that fans are interested in just turning it over to Tuttle. Michael Penix has really struggled so far this year. Where is the quarterback situation right now with the Hoosiers?
Oh, it is Michael Penix's job for now. And I think, just watching what we saw in camp, and we had no reason to think that it shouldn't be Michael Penix's job, but he has not performed the way that he was practicing, the way that they had gotten used to him performing in previous seasons. It obviously has taken him a little while just to get, I don't know if it's back mentally or what, but just to get any kind of rhythm whatsoever. He doesn't seem to be still physically affected by the knee, but it seemed like it took him a couple of weeks to get right. And even this week, he was still misfiring and, made a couple just bad decisions, basically, in a couple of situations. It's like correctable stuff, because it was clearly a guy trying to make a play in a desperate situation when it wasn't there. So you can at least see where it's coming from, but it's plays that he absolutely needed to not make. Just take a sack, just go out of bounds, just something. Just don't put the ball up in the air and leave it open to be picked off. And those ended up being two very, very costly interceptions. So, is he on the firmest of ground? He's not. I mean, I don't think Tom Allen is looking to make a move quickly. You're talking about a guy that had started each of the three previous seasons. And Jack Tuttle has very, very limited experience. He's got some talent. But I don't think he's got, more juice to him right now than Michael Penix. But you can only, let a guy make so many mistakes before you look at him and say, man, we got to get somebody else in there, because this guy's just throwing the game, the game and therefore the season away. It is not a situation, I don't think, right now where it's necessarily close to being Tuttle's job. But if things continue to go sideways, obviously it can go in a direction where he just can't, Tom Allen just can't hold that off anymore. But you're talking about an experienced guy, guys that won a lot of games at the college level. And Jack Tuttle is not a guy that's played a lot of games at the college level. So it's tough to, just turn it over to him. It's not the same as had they had an even up competition, in the fall and Penix won and started poorly. That'd be an easy move. But you're talking about a guy that's been a starter for 3 years before this.
One thing that could make it easier on Penix is if Freifogel stops dropping passes. I don't know what the number is so far collectively for the season, but I think he had three of them just last week against Cincinnati. He's got catchable balls. He wants to, and he's the one that came out and said he wants to be the best receiver in the Big Ten. He's got to start catching footballs. Was that addressed at all this week with Tom Allen or Ty Freifogel?
Yeah, no, we asked Ty that directly. How'd you feel about it? And he just said, you know, my job is to catch the ball, and I didn't catch the ball, and that's a problem. It's obviously that simple. There's not going to be a more detailed answer than that. You know, there's nothing scientific about it. It's just I need to catch the ball. And it had never really been an issue. I mean, if you look at last year, there were so many, you know, catches he made in traffic, and what you would call combat catches when he's dealing with guys right on the hip or jumping along with him. He was able to haul some balls in. On Saturday against Cincinnati, I mean, he missed some stuff that was really in his gut. It really seemed like the attention was a lot to him, I think. He was dealing with an All-American cornerback and Ahmad Gardner, who did not make his life easy, and it seemed like the rare occasions when Freifogel got some level of separation, I don't know if he got the yips or what, or just didn't see it all the way in. It seemed to just be, the harassment of dealing with a cornerback at that level seemed to kind of get to him, and he obviously looked at him and said, hey, I got to get right. Like, that's not acceptable. That's certainly, my basic thing that I've got to do if I get nothing else accomplished. It's catch the ball when it's thrown to me, and I didn't catch the ball when it was thrown to me, and basically everybody kind of said the same thing. Now, that's all there is to it, but he's got to make some plays. You know, the issue is it's not like a situation where you can, bench him to get it right, because, they're not getting basically any production from the opposite outside receiver position right now. I mean, I think between the two of them, Cameron Buckley and Miles Marshall, have been the starters at that position, I think maybe have 3 receptions. Freifogel still has 11. I think he's matched up with DJ Matthews, the slot receiver, for the same amount of catches. So, he's still one of the most productive guys. But, I mean, in that situation, where you're playing a team at that caliber, your best player has to make plays, and he did not.
I think if Indiana can keep this game from getting out of hand points-wise, I think Indiana has the advantage. But what about if it is a shootout? Can Indiana play with Western Kentucky in a shootout?
Well, I mean, I know Western's given up some points. I mean, I would expect that I don't think they'll have the defenders that when they're clicking, they should be able to hold them down. Basically, it's a situation where you're like, you should have guys like Freifogel and Matthews running all over these guys, and you should have Stephen Carr doing the same thing. That's something Indiana needs to prove that it can do. If it can't do it against Western Kentucky, then it certainly can't do it against Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan State and Michigan. Like, they've got to get a big offensive performance, and I think that's really what has to happen this week more than anything else. That's the most important thing, is not just win this football game for Indiana, but get this offense feeling like it's capable of winning a game like that, where they need to hang at least 35, if not 42, if not 50 by themselves. They need to sort of prove to themselves they're still, that they are capable of doing that. It's been a bit since they've done it, and they certainly haven't looked close to that this year. The bottom line answer is they need to prove it. They need to be able to go out and beat somebody 48 to 45 if they have to, and just be able to move the ball. They haven't shown it yet. I would think they should be able to do it against Western Kentucky. Against Idaho, obviously, it was lesser of a program, and also they got a bunch of touchdowns, by different manners, by punt return, by punt block. You didn't really see the offense really, operating its highest gear. It had a couple good drives, but not the same. I mean, they need some big plays where they score from far out, and where they, hang touchdowns more, get a couple in a row in there. Haven't seen it yet and need to be able to see it. It's just critical for Indiana to prove it can do that.
Is Indiana ever going to be a running football team? Will they ever get this on track? Or we've seen what Indiana is and what they're not?
As far as what they can do on the ground, I mean, I think you saw some better moments on Saturday. You saw, I thought, some good interior blocking between the centers and the guards at least. You were getting a little bit of room in there for Stephen Carr to move, but you also had some. I know there was a period where there was a bunch of runs up the middle that were getting like an average of 1.6 yards per carry, and that's not going to cut it. They're better off than they were a couple weeks ago. At least they've got a fully functional offensive line now. The first week against Iowa, they had to make some changes with Luke Haggard out. Had to move Matt Bedford back to tackle after he'd been practicing at camp at guard. And so Bedford's back at guard. I mean, I think they've at least got their best 5 linemen out there, so that's a start. And I think they're starting to function a little bit better, but even what they have now is certainly not going to cut it when it gets to the better defensive lines in the Big Ten. I mean, I think it's possible they should be able to beat up on Western Kentucky this week, and they've got to be able to take advantage of the fact they'll probably be bigger and able to win up front. I think that's another thing that they need to prove, at least against an opponent like this, that they can consistently run the football. But are they going to be a team that's going to hang 250 on Ohio State or Penn State on the ground? I don't think so.
Always appreciate it. Great stuff. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Dustin DePirak joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Of course, He follows the Hoosiers beat for Indy Star and for the Bloomington paper, which are actually both owned by the same company. They have double coverage on the Hoosiers down at the Indy Star. Great job by Dustin Dopierak. We've got to take a break. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to be talking, well, big news for NBA fans, especially Purdue fans, about one of your former Boilermakers. We'll tell you about that as the NBA camps are getting started. Also, some high school football news. We've got college football, more college football to talk about, our high school football picks of the week. We're just going to go fly right through this next hour because we've got to turn it over to the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show coming up at 6 o'clock. Rolling through a Friday edition of the Sports Rush, your local sports fix, 4 to 6. Okay, so our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Just want to know what's on your mind today. Any kind of sports questions? The big news, of course, Carson Wentz back at practice, took the field practice today. He is now a game time decision. And I tell you, I am just really concerned that the Colts are bringing Carson Wentz back too soon after what I saw on the field last week. And he might look fine. He may, you know, get a couple of shots in the ankles, a couple of pain pills, a couple of good wrap jobs on those two ankles, and maybe he can labor his way around. But remember how long Andrew Luck looked okay, and yet he had all types of injuries and things that he was dealing with for so long. Just unbelievable that Carson Wentz is a game-time decision at this point, and my guess is with the Colts realizing what they've got as a backup right now, and they're not confident in Jacob Eason, or there wouldn't be discussion about Brett Hundley being the backup. Here's the other thing that's going to happen. Who's going to be active on Sunday? Are the Colts going to have to activate a third quarterback to get through Sunday? And if they do, somebody else has to take a step back. Braden Smith ruled out. Jordan Glasgow ruled out. But it does look like Xavier Rhodes is going to be available to play. I think Paris Campbell is probably going to be back. We'll get a full report here coming up after the top of the hour. We'll tell you what happened as far as today's injury update and current game status as far as who's going to play, who's questionable, who's doubtful, who's ruled out. We'll give that all to you coming up just after the top of the hour. Still coming up, we've got some college football, our high school football picks of the week. The replay is on the way. Stick with us. You're listening to a Friday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.